Today's program was brought to you by Whole Foods Market. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
Let's go out to eat and get some meat. Turkey and jam, macaroni and ham. Say, do you like steak? I can surely make. If you hear me now, sing it loud for me, crowd.
You are listening to You Look Hungry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Helen Holliman, and I'm back for another week of radio in Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And today I'm joined by Jonathan Cristaldi, better known as part of the, well, Johnny Cigar, or as part of the Noble Rot. So thanks so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
It is April 12th, and in a few days marks the anniversary of the 100th anniversary of the sinking of the Titanic. Pretty sad, but also, wow, that was a really long time ago,
right?
Because again, we've been talking before the show, and for some reason, maybe it's because we watched Titanic, but it doesn't seem that long ago.
It seems like only 1997 when James Cameron came out.
Was that when it came out?
God. Leo and Kate, the whole nine yards.
Scratch that. I feel old. That's what I would like to say.
Yeah.
So, you know, the question is, how do you, Jonathan, connect to the Titanic? Why are you here? Tell everybody.
That's a nice question. Well, it's interesting. This centennial presents itself as an opportunity to do something interesting. I think with history, with anything, any major event that happens in history, the world is always interested and fascinated, and centennials are big deals. So let's take this instance, Titanic, right? An opportunity to pay homage to something that happened. Yes, it was a tragic happenstance. However, we can certainly remember it in an honorable way, in a way that sort of remembers the spirit of. I mean, think about this thing. This was a monumental effort. The architects involved, the building of the ship in Liverpool. The crew. I mean, the money, for one thing. I mean, there was no expense was spared. This is such an interesting artifact in history. And revisiting it, remembering it, I think, memorializing it is interesting and something to be explored.
So, yeah, before we get into it, a little bit of background and some fun, not, oh God, wrong word, some details about the sinking of the Titanic. You know, it caused the deaths of 1,514 people. It's considered one of the deadliest peacetime maritime disasters in world history. She was the largest ship afloat at the time of her maiden voyage. And, you know, of the three Olympic-class ocean liners operated by the White Star Line, she was built, you know, it took basically 2 years to build. And in total, she carried 2,224 people. So that's quite a few people. So yes, you're going to have this event. Can you tell us a little bit about what it is and how this whole project came about?
I will. And I just want to add that, you know, one of the things that's happened, obviously, is an exploration of the history of this boat. All sorts of things I did not know about. And it's been interesting to read in the news lately. You see, there are so many articles coming out about what could have happened, what might have happened, and reasons for it hitting the iceberg. There's all these stories about the moon and how the moon was creating these, dislodging these icebergs that shouldn't have been around. I mean, all sorts of interesting things. And maybe if the ship had actually hit the iceberg dead on, if they didn't try to swing, they actually would have been okay. It's very interesting. The history of how I got involved in this project goes back to just January of this year, actually. And the chefs, the executive chefs on board, chefs Rob McHugh, guy who is on Hell's Kitchen, and chef Adam Banks, who is on Robland Company, which is on Bravo TV. The two of these guys reached out to me, had been discussing this. You know, they are chefs. They knew about this last meal and wanted to recreate it. Weren't quite sure what to do. So they said, Johnny, What should we do? How should we do this? Let's have a discussion about it. And that's that was back in January. And we decided then and there that instead of trying to recreate the last meal, which is essentially what many people are doing, we would take the menu and we would say, look, why don't we do something different? Why don't we say, what if this ship was still around today? What if it was? What if this didn't happen? What if this tragedy didn't actually happen? And it was still roaming the high seas. How would this meal look? How would it be served by today's standards, by 2012 standards? Haute cuisine of 1912, very different from haute cuisine of 2012. So it presents a neat opportunity.
Absolutely. Well, that being said, let's roll back the tapes and talk about what they actually ate on the evening of April 14th, 1912.
Not all that interesting.
Well, this, so for a little context, you know, this is the first class passengers. Most of them paid about $100,000 just to get on this boat, you know, and it included people, I believe the Gettys, some portions of the Getty family.
I've seen them.
Many, many renowned New York well-to-do families. J.P. Morgan, who actually financed and owned the Titanic, was supposed to be on it, and then at the last minute changed his mind. So just, you know, we've all seen the movie, maybe 11 times in the movie theater.
Some of us, apparently.
Yeah. Okay. But imagine being decked out, and you have to sit down, myself in a corset, which would be really uncomfortable, and about to eat this. The first course, you have hors d'oeuvres, oysters. Second course is consommé Olga. Mm. Do you have any idea what that is?
We do.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's...
Feel free to jump in and explain what these are.
This is one of those things that we are... the chefs are working really hard to actually recreate, because it involves sturgeon, but a very bizarre part of the sturgeon that is incredibly difficult to source. It's the marrow of the...
Of the spinal cord.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah.
Whoa.
And it's a very bizarre and interesting dish, and I couldn't even tell you what that would taste like, because I've never had the opportunity. So we're sort of working on that.
Fish spinal cord. That sounds really... Bone marrow. It sounds great.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a new thing. Well, the other option for second course is cream of barley. Third course, poached salmon with mousseline sauce and cucumbers. Fourth course, filet mignon lili. Do you know what that is?
Lili is, it's French. I know that. I know a lot of lilies.
Yeah.
But this particular lily has something to do with foie gras and
things along that.
I mean, and just going back to what you said, barley, cream of barley, right? Can you imagine?
Yes.
That's like, the meal you've been waiting for. Here it is. Boom, cream of barley.
I'd expect that in third class, actually.
Right?
Is that weird? Let's see. Fourth course also had saute of chicken, lyonnaise, vegetable marrow, farsi.
Farsi. It's a grain.
How vegetable marrow?
Yeah, what about it?
Interesting.
Right?
Interesting.
I think they made some of this up.
I think, yeah. I've never heard of vegetable. I'm thinking of
the
bone
insides
marrow.
Of,
the insides. Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't
you
know.
You scrape out the inside of a broccoli. That's...
Let's see. Fifth course, lamb with mint sauce, roast duckling, applesauce, sirloin of beef, chateau potatoes, green peas, creamed carrots, boiled rice, parmentier and boiled potatoes. Sixth course, punch romaine. Seventh course, roast squab and cress. Eighth course, cold asparagus vinaigrette. Ninth course, pâté de foie gras and celery. Tenth course, Waldorf pudding, peaches and chartreuse jelly, chocolate and vanilla eclairs, or French ice cream. And are you still wearing your pants after the end of this?
No, this is the Edwardian era at its finest, at its shining hour, sort of. I mean, actually, it's on its way out. I mean, this is it. This is how they did things. And I don't believe there were belts. I don't believe that there were... I believe people had buttons that they could unbutton. I mean, can you imagine trying to get up after this meal? And we didn't even talk about booze. I mean, there's certainly wine paired with all of these courses. I mean, it's unimaginable. So trying to recreate that, and the portion sizes, too. I mean, granted, it's when all is said and done, it was a cruise ship. And we all hear all sorts of things about cruise ships. Read David Foster Wallace's... experiences on cruise ships. And, you know, so fair enough. Nevertheless, think about what you just read.
So
we're condensing that. We're turning that down from 10, 11 courses to 7. Manageable.
I mean, you've got to. Otherwise, people have to show up wearing maternity clothing because it's like, this is crazy.
Breakaway tuxedos.
Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. So what can you tell people about the event? Because it is quite secretive. Mm. It's sold out. Mm. Last night, there were 10 tickets left.
Were there?
For VIPs. 10?
Who said that?
Maybe I read an old blog post.
You read an old blog post. They've been gone for a few days now.
Oh, darn.
We were down to just a couple for a week. And yeah, now they are adios. What I can tell you is that it's not going to be on a boat, contrary to popular belief or desire or want. It will be somewhere in Manhattan. That I can say. And, you know, by Sunday, Monday, we'll all sort of know.
Yeah.
We'll sort of know.
So, what are people supposed to wear?
We've said, dress to impress. You know, we say, hey, we'd love to see you in black tie. But anything of the period is welcome, too. We really just want people to look nice, feel nice. This is an opportunity to do that.
So, tell us a little bit about the menu development, to the best of what you can dispel.
Right, because I'm no chef. Yeah. I'm not even a cook. I don't know why. I'm the wine guy. Well, I'm the wine guy, and I'm working with a wonderful lady who named Jennifer Simonetti Bryan, who's an MW and a master of wine. She's one of 28 in the country. I think she's the fourth woman to receive this accolade. She's a genius, and she's helped source a lot of amazing wines. But in terms of the menu development, Adam and Rob have been pouring through books. So certainly there's the book The Last Meal on the Titanic, and it's been very helpful. The menu exists, obviously. You just read it. So these guys have gotten together, and they've powered through many brainstorm sessions trying to figure out exactly how to condense, and what they've done is maintained the integrity of all the ingredients, all of the components. So, in fact, even though it's 7 courses, you're going to experience pretty much all of that food, just interwoven in a modern sort of cookery sense. So these guys have been working very hard. They're actually right now at the International Culinary Center, the ICC, where the French Culinary Institute is held. That's our prep kitchen. So they are there gluing meat together and, you know, creating powders and all sorts of things.
Very exciting. Absolutely.
It's going to be fun.
Yeah. So how long do you... Because I imagine that... If you're going to eat a 10-course meal, that must take a long time.
Exactly.
So, I mean, can you guesstimate for us a little bit about how... Because clearly you're condensing mm-hmm. this meal, but...
Indeed,
how
indeed.
Long do you anticipate it takes?
I think this will be about 3 hours. We might have a cocktail hour, too.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Might have surprises.
Ooh.
Throughout the night. Yeah.
Surprises. I love how cryptic you are. Mm. I'm going to crack the code today on this show.
I look forward to it. You've got about 17 more minutes. See if we can do this.
Well, okay. So I want to back up for a moment. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about the noble rot and what it is?
Sure. It's a mold. It's a fungus. Grows on grapes. Botrytis cinerea. It's the Latin. It also happens to be the name of my traveling wine saloon. I've been doing events since 2009. Experiences, throwing experiences for people, trying to break down the idea of the wine tasting, break it down into a manageable, acceptable world realm of you know, people's imaginations. I think you go into a wine tasting and it freaks people out, and wine... is definitely a frightening thing, you know? And so I want to say, look, this isn't so hard. You can do this. You know, we have conversations. We talk about what kind of coffee you like, what kind of beer you drink, and we start to learn a little bit about your palate, but it's all very conversational. The events are fun. You know, we taste through 5, 6, 7 different wines in a night. We usually have somebody who knows a lot more about wine in the room than I do, a winemaker. a brand ambassador. And live music, we try to have entertainment. And I try really hard to still be standing by the end of the night. I mean, I have to taste all the wine.
You have to.
I have to, more so than everybody else, just to make sure that it's good and that it's breathing and that it's doing its thing and opening up. This is ridiculous. So that's the Noble Rot. And, you know, we've done all sorts of things here in New York and out in San Francisco, and partnered with supper clubs here to do all sorts of really exciting events. We've we partnered recently with a newcomer to the scene, this guy, David Santos of Segredo, which was really exciting and fun. He did a great meal. Stag Dining Group, wonderful group out in San Francisco. Five guys who are just, I don't know. If anyone is listening and you get to out to San Francisco, look up the Stag Dining Group. They're amazing. And the list goes on and on.
We're going to take a really quick break. But when we get back, we have more from Johnny Cigar, or Jonathan. You are listening to You Look Hungry on Heritage Radio Network. Keep it locked.
And sustainable seafood at Whole Foods Market. On April 22nd, Earth Day 2012, we'll be eliminating all red-rated species of wild-caught fish and seafood from our stores across the country. It's our way of supporting our oceans and helping to reverse trends in overfishing. Learn more at blueoceaninstitute.org and wholefoodsmarket.com.
If you're just tuning in, you are still listening to You Look Hungry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm still your host, Helen Holliman. And I'm joined today by Jonathan Cristaldi. And we've been discussing the 100th anniversary of the Titanic's sinking. Sad. But the positive is we're going to celebrate it by talking about, you know, this amazing upcoming dinner that you're going to have on the 14th.
I would say pay homage. We're paying homage.
Yeah, that's the best way to put it. So you're a wine guy. What were they drinking?
You know, we don't know exactly. Mm. We know we have records of from White Star Line of what the ship purchased. So we know it was on board. And this is 1912, so it's not like there were any Australian, you know, Shirazes, no Napa Valley Cabernets. It was French. It was mostly Bordeaux and Burgundy, Champagne, certainly, possibly Loire, German wine, Italian wine, Portugal, ports. That's sort of what we know. We don't know what they were serving with dinner, though. No record exists of wine pairings. So Jennifer Simonetti Bryan, who I mentioned before the break, she's a master of wine. We got together and had a discussion about how to do this. And she had a great idea, which was, why don't we make sure at least that the brands that we feature were in existence by 1912 or, you know, prior to 1912. And so that is what we're, that's how the wine pairings are going to work.
So there's clearly no California wine on this menu.
There might have been, there certainly were California wineries. I don't know if we could have gotten our hands on any brands that have been around since then, but yeah, they've changed names and that sort of thing.
So, you know, music.
Mm.
There's this back and forth theory that the band, the Four String Quartet, actually went down with the ship and played music until it sunk. Mm-hmm. People don't know, but you know, according to people that were there on the ship, that's what they say. What can we expect for music this weekend?
Yeah, a lot of speculation about that. And, you know, why don't we take all the speculation and sort of ball it together? So in keeping in with this theme of giving this whole menu, this whole night an upgrade, what would it be like, right, if it was happening today? We want to do the same thing with the music. So rather than having a string quartet, we will have strings, but it's not a quartet. We have a wonderful group, and I don't know if anyone listening remembers, a few years ago there was an amazing band that had immense success and was on to all sorts of exciting things. They were called Apes and Androids. One of the band members is named Morgan Z. Is doing his own thing these days. It's called Chrome Canyon. And I don't know how to explain it or describe it. It's new age. He uses the MacBook Pro and these, you know, I mean, he's all these gadgets and gizmos, and he makes all these amazing sounds. And so he's creating a score to essentially fuel the evening. So this will be underscoring the whole night. It's not like it's going to be a performance per se. It is an ongoing performance of really interesting sounds and music and combination of maybe some samples from some of these pieces. Like, you know, everyone thinks that they were playing Nearer My God to Thee. Or were they? Well, maybe they were playing something else. There are a couple other accounts that say it was another song. So that's where we're going with the music, and we're pretty excited about that.
So I've had another guest on this show, an artist, Julia Ziegler-Haynes, who we discussed last meals, the photographs that she took of recreations of Death Row inmates' last meals. She cooked them, styled them, photographed them, made a book. And, you know, Titanic dinners, basically recreating Titanic dinners, has been a popular thing in the past. You can Google how to throw your own Titanic dinner, and there's actually a WikiHow page, and it's very bizarre. That being said, you know, what, and maybe because the chefs aren't here, you can't answer for them, but what in the process of recreating this, or paying homage, or however you'd like to put it, how has this changed your perception of the meal, or what have you learned about the people that were there? Because it is kind of a glimpse into a time capsule. And why do you think we're still so fascinated with it?
Well, we actually, the chefs and I have, Adam and Rob and I have talked a lot about this. Food tells history. Food is history. I mean, when you think of history books or what you know, what we know of previous generations, I mean, we know a lot about food. I mean, within our own generation. I mean, think about how we've progressed from TV dinners, all kinds of canned food to demanding where we are today, you know, everything locally sourced, organic, fresh ingredients. I mean, this for us has been a personal journey into the food history of our culture, of what we were doing, of what the world was doing. And it was very interesting to discover that, for instance, things like asparagus was incredibly rare. I mean, and it was a delicacy. It was its own course. It's funny to me to think like that. You go into Whole Foods or any grocery store anywhere, and, you know, boom, there's 8 billion pounds of asparagus. It's not even a thought. So that's sort of interesting, and how excited they might have been to have barley soup, you know, to experience these ingredients that we very largely take for granted. So I think it's interesting. It constantly puts in perspective the idea that food, you know, is food is a luxury. And I think that we forget that sometimes. You know, it's accessible to us in every which way. But even though there were unlimited amounts of money being tossed, you know, at this ship and what it was going into, they still could only source is what was local. Literally, you know, I mean, it's not like they were having things flown in from, you know, the Far East necessarily. They might have been. I may be mistaken, but I mean, they really had to work with what was available to them on a very local level, which is interesting.
Yeah, you can only imagine. I mean, just having to refrigerate foie gras or something like that on a ship, because clearly, you know, they're on this boat for a while, so it's
yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, Rob was talking about this, actually. I'm not even quite sure what the refrigeration situation was like. I'm sorry, I don't know that. But I think it definitely is a neat thing, and I would encourage people to look it up.
Probably large ice blocks. That's what I imagine.
Yeah,
but even just getting those on the ship, like...
Oh, indeed.
I'm so curious to know how that actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate to ask this question.
Oh, no.
Is Titanic 3D happening on the night of your dinner?
I've heard of Titanic 3D. No, we won't be. But you know what is happening? We've only got a few minutes left. But it's interesting to point out that the other thing that's going on is, you know, we're sort of creating a little bit of a gateway here. There was a government agency around in the 70s. That was called The Project, that taught people how to time travel through deep hypnosis and meditation. So by recreating this dinner, we've sort of creating a gateway. And I'm just saying that there might be an opportunity, if I play my cards right, to go back, put myself on the ship in 1912, and see if I can't change the course of history.
Yeah, well, that would be great, because... Yeah, we wouldn't be sitting here talking about this.
But. No, and Sunday, May, you know, if I can accomplish this task, I have a task. The chefs don't like me to talk about this, but I do have this idea, and I'm going to utilize these techniques. If I can make this happen, I think Sunday the world will be a different place.
You're blowing my mind. Are you Keanu Reeves right now? I think you are. He's in every weird time travel.
Keanu and I are like this.
He's... So, all right, so basically no one can get tickets anymore. However, what can they do when this dinner is over to kind of take a look back and see how things went down?
The internet is going to explode with content. Can go back to our website. We'll post a lot of photographs. We have a site which is dinetitanic.com. But there's going to be some interesting press people in the room, and if people pay attention to the newspapers and the online magazines, I think you might see some noise about it.
So what you're telling me is the next time I Google Titanic, I won't see Leo and
I hope
Kate.
Not. This is really why we did this. I mean, we're trying to push the page rank, you know, of certain items that come up down.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And do you guys have like a Twitter or somewhere else that people can find you? No?
No, we don't.
I like this mystery. I mean, it is in par with people didn't have Twitter in 1912. So that's a good call.
It's true. People didn't have Twitter a few years ago.
Yeah, which is also bizarre to think about. Uh-huh. But, you know, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show.
My pleasure.
And Leonardo DiCaprio, if you're listening, I apologize for plastering your face all over my childhood wall. I should be probably arrested as a 13-year-old for all of that, because it was very creepy. Seriously, it was like Law and Order style. Anyways, thanks to Jack Hensley and Joe and the rest of the crew at Heritage Radio Network and Roberta's. And I'll see y'all next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.